Headline.
Europe is rocked by mass protests against the proposed U.S.-European Union trade pact, with millions calling to abandon the controversial TTIP agreement that's currently being negotiated in Miami. This is what we are going to discuss in our second section, Between the Lines, focusing on the most thought-provoking publications of the week. An article entitled Berlin Anti-TTIP Trade Deal Protest Attracts Hundreds of Thousands, carried by The Guardian and written by Chris Johnston, the author makes note that hundreds of thousands of people marched in Berlin on Saturday to oppose a planned free trade deal between the European Union and the United States that is claimed to be anti-democratic and to threaten food safety and environmental standards. He also writes that opposition has escalated over the past year in Germany and other European countries, with critics pointing out that the deal will give too much power to multinational companies at the expense of consumers and workers. Finally, he astutely observed that the level of resistance in Germany has surprised Chancellor Angela Merkel's government, with Saturday's rally underlining the challenge it faces to win public support for the deal.
Well, Andrew, let me say that obviously those protests were not only restricted to Germany. We've seen similar protests, though less in scale, in Amsterdam, in Strasbourg. We know about 3 million petition against the trade pact. What we've seen in Berlin was really something extraordinary, unimaginable. Can you imagine? 250,000 of people are going to streets to protest against the agreement which is not yet signed. And this is in a moment when authorities just are trying to convince the public opinion that will only make Germany good. Let me just refer to the publication. Probably you've not seen that in Süddeutsche Zeitung. German economy minister has written a story saying that translating trend and investment pact won't hurt the quality of life. And it seems that people are simply not buying that notion. Why? Because they're afraid that that will reduce food and environment standards. That would endanger jobs and undermine, well, probably the credibility of the government. And that's why if we see at those 250,000 of those protesters, so we see that they're quite a motley people. So they were representatives of 170 German labor unions. They were representatives of various NGOs. They were nature conservation lobbies. They were charities. So many, many, many groups. And this shows that this is really mass grassroots level against so-called free trade pact, because people smell a rat in that. They feel that it's not a fair trade.
Yeah, there's definitely mass mobilization of society. So to address this issue right now, I would like to speak to our in-studio guest, Mr. Ernest Soltanov. He's the coordinator of the Mir Initiative Project and Think Tank here in Moscow.
This issue of the trade agreement with the United States, it's once again, as the sanctions against Russia, it's a divisive point between the European and countries like Germany or France, bureaucracy and the population. And actually, it's the same as the introduction of euro, for instance. Everybody expected that it will make the population richer. And in the end, the 80% became poorer than they were before, and 20% became richer and richer than they were before. So the population actually is afraid of every move from the European bureaucracy, and they don't trust them any longer.
Absolutely.
Than they were doing before.
I think this is a key point, and people, obviously, what they demand is really transparent talks, because this is can you imagine?
There is zero transparency.
Those talks in Miami, they are conducted under behind the doors. They're secret negotiations. No one knows about the terms and conditions, and this is a key point.
Yeah, so what do you think, Ernest, then, about we see that so many people had mobilized against this. We see a broad coalition of people from that wouldn't normally get in bed with one another, if one may say, people from the right, people from the left. What do you think this says about TTIP's ability to really anger the whole population?
I would call it a revamping or like relaunching anti-globalism, because for many years, since 2000-2005 period, anti-globalism had no real monster in front of it to fight against. And now, actually, this huge bureaucracy and its strange secrecy policy, it's starting to actually to attract to once again to sensibilize the population in the countries to fight against this.
We're very excited to welcome Mr. Manuel Oxenreiter, editor-in-chief of Zorst News Magazine, onto our program.
Red Line.
You know, we're discussing the anti-TTIP protest that have just spawned across the EU, especially in Germany. And I'm wondering, which of the agreement's many controversies angers the German public the most, and why?
Well, we have to see that, I mean, this was a quite unique protest we saw last weekend in Germany. It was unique because, in my opinion, the people protesting, this 250,000 people, represent the majority of the Germans. There were people protesting together who wouldn't deal with each other on the political level usually because they come from very different camps. We had there the typical left anti-capitalist protesters. We had there many environmentalists who are very worried about the content of the TTIP concerning the health issues and, as I said, the GMO issues. We have people protesting against the TTIP because of patriotic sentiments, because they fear that the Americans would enlarge their political influence in Germany via the TTIP. We had even people sympathizing with the German corporates, with the German industry, because they don't want that the industry is dominated by the legal elements of the TTIP agreement. So all these people were protesting together. What is an interesting fact is that, for example, many people who would vote at elections, let us say, for example, for the Social Democratic Party, were also protesting. And then now it becomes interesting because the Social Democrats are right now promoting the TTIP agreement while their followers and while their members are against. But this is, and this is now an important fact when it comes not just to the TTIP, but in general to decisive political decisions, especially in Germany, that the most important decisive political decisions in Germany within the last 20 years were always done against the will of the majority. I tell you just two examples. Example number one is the introduction of the euro currency. The euro currency was introduced in Germany against, openly against the will of the majority. And the other point is the German engagement, the military engagement in Afghanistan and in Kosovo, the NATO missions Germany is participating in. Also, if you ask the people, we have enough polls, they are against. So the question is, how long will it take now with the TTIP that the will of the majority will be represented in recent politics? And this is indeed a big problem here in Germany.
Yeah, this is very interesting. And just as the last question, you were mentioning about long-term perspective. So I want to ask you this. It's very symbolic, as we know, that Germany is both the economic engine of Europe and has now also proven itself to be the society that's leading the fight against TTIP. How do you think this will impact on other EU countries and the position that their societies take towards this issue?
First of all, I absolutely agree with the question. If you want to see how important Germany is in Europe, don't just watch the economic statistics. Don't just watch the business activities. If you want to see how important Germany is, simply watch the American intel activities on German soil. The U.S. is enforcing within the last years a lot of spying in Germany, and they are spying against politicians, they are spying against our chancellor, they are spying against our industry. They were doing industry and espionage within the last years because they were always very worried that Germany might swift out of this transatlantic agreement that German companies start doing business, for example, with the Islamic Republic of Iran, which does find a lot of applause, of course, in Washington. So if you want to see the importance of Germany, watch the activities of the Americans and what they are doing in Germany and in my country. It is a matter of fact that the European entity, the EU, cannot exist without Germany. But it's a matter of fact as well that Germany can exist without this EU entity. So the Americans know very well that a sovereign and independent Germany, a Germany which would act on behalf of German interests and as well of European continental interests, would automatically mean the complete loss of transatlanticist influence on the continent. That would cause Europe would get in closer with Russia again. There would become maybe many agreements. Russia provides a lot of resources. Germany provides a lot of high technology. If there wouldn't be any more, any transatlanticist inducted barriers between this, this could be a very good development for both countries. Germany could, if Germany would deal on behalf of German and European interests, immediately put down any sanctions and embargoes on Syria. They would immediately start going into trade, into full trade relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran and with many other countries and entities from the so-called axis of evil, the Americans said. So, of course, if Germany would get rid of the American burden on all these things, of course, all the other European countries automatically would benefit by this development.
Okay, Manuel, thank you very much. It was very, very insightful. We appreciate it. Joining us right now is Dr. Elaine Fahy, Senior Lecturer in Law at the City Law School at City University, London.
Red Line.
We saw in the news that, you know, in Germany there were about 250,000 people protesting, and in the UK there was a moderately smaller number, but the numbers in the UK and Germany did not compare to anything that we saw anywhere else in the continent. And I just brought it up because in, you know, the eastern part, the newer states, it didn't seem like the public was really that engaged in this debate. So, I mean, do you have any further words on this, maybe why you might think that might be?
Well, I think in particular in Germany, there's a tremendously strong opposition, and it's a parliamentarian-based opposition. The parliamentarians are very much pushing. Also, the European Parliament, there's a very particular engagement in Germany that I think isn't replicated in any other member state in the EU. But I simply don't know enough about the Eastern European context, and I think that the parliamentary, you know, the way in which the German Constitutional Court has interpreted parliamentarians' rights and to information about international affairs and about European affairs puts the East-West distinction beyond question, that the German court has a specific view on this. And this, I think, trickles down to ordinary discourse and popular politics and daily life generally. So to return to your question, I still don't know enough about the factual basis of what you say, but I would see things being quite different in Germany to other member states. And I remember they have also in the German media leaked the texts of TTIP far and CETA far in advance of other member states. So there's a particular political discourse about TTIP that is not necessarily replicated to the same extent in any other jurisdiction so vividly.
Okay, well, how much staying power do you think these protests will have, you know, where they have sprouted up, that is? And could they possibly spread as more details are worked out and leaked about, as you mentioned, about the agreement?
Well, I think there's it's a popular movement, but there also are many legal movements to oppose TTIP. There's specific legal provisions and legal actions being taken across the member states in what's known as the Citizens' Rights Initiative. So I think that there are clear signs of discontent, and they, I suppose, at this point in time in the negotiations, it's natural that the opposition is starting to mobilize a little bit better, and they've had more time, and it's more coordinated, and matters are going to reach some political significance in the near future as national parliaments are called upon to approve this. So, yes, I think that it's certainly the case that there will be changes in this regard.
Okay, and I guess just as the concluding question then, what do you think about TTIP's overall feasibility? I mean, is this something that we might actually see enter into practice, or if it does, will it be a completely different document? Basically, what I mean is, could the national assemblies of the independent states actually enact pressure to change the contents, or would the whole thing just be scrapped eventually and really not amount to anything? What do you think we might see?
Wow, these are the easy questions. It's a very difficult. It's a very difficult question. I think the feasibility is, it becomes seriously in doubt when you see this very recent proposals for a world investment court that the EU has been pushing out there, which looked like having absolutely no chance of success in U.S. politics, certainly as far as I understand it. So there are major shifts in negotiations that I think will prove very difficult to pass as a joint text, and there still is considerable opposition to ISDS in most European states, and the Commission is going to fight a difficult battle to reach an agreement which, on the regulatory cooperation side of things, manages to preserve world member states and EU law as it stands. So I think it's far from an easy text, and it's going to be very difficult to see how they're going to, certainly the ISDS provision is going to be a huge obstacle to be surmounted. So I don't think the future looks particularly bright for TTIP, but having said all that, matters seem to change rather quickly day in, day out. So.
Okay, well, Dr. Fahy, thank you very much for this very comprehensive interview. We appreciate it. right, so this wraps up our second section about the anti-TTIP protest and perhaps the start of a new anti-globalization movement in Europe. So we'd like to thank all of our guests for participating, beginning with our in-studio guest, Mr. Ernest Sultanov, coordinator of the Mir Initiative Project and Think Tank here in Moscow, Mr. Manuel Olkshenreiter, editor-in-chief of Zorst News Magazine, and Dr. Elaine Fahey, senior lecturer in law at the City Law School of City University, London. Following in our program, we have Alexander Lukashenko, no longer the last dictator in Europe. Stay with us.